The character planted in the audience that you'd never expect to be on the payroll. And when she plays her big scene, she creates more heat than you could ever imagine. Now here's the secret. She's a stunt granny.
Welcome to another edition of Stunt Granny Audio. This is a very special one. This is a review of Prime Wrestling's Resolution 5, an enduring spirit. One man who has an enduring spirit is Mr. Dan Keister. How you doing, Dan?
Well, I'm doing pretty well. That's flattering to hear that, I'm so well thought of. Physically, I'm a little tired, but emotionally and mentally, I'm doing quite well.
Excellent. Well, that's good, because as long as you don't fall asleep on us, we will be okay.
No, it's all good. I've been trying this CrossFit, which is quite the exercise wave, and I've been doing it for about a month now, and pretty much kicks my butt. And so when I'm done with that, I just kind of collapse and try to figure out how much Ben Gay I can put on without creating tremendous pain. And that's like what I worry about. So no, I'm in good spirits and happy to talk about this event, which was another, I think, we could give our thumbs up, thumbs down, thumbs in the middle, I guess, in case people are listening, wanting a may want to buy it on iPay-per-view before they listen along, and I would give it a fairly solid thumbs up. I don't know about you. I wouldn't give it a 10 or anything, but I think it's a very solid show from top to bottom.
No. Since we've pretty much come to the idea that the ring breaking was not intentional,
yes,
it's still... has a tendency to bring down the rating of any show when you've got to wait 35 minutes to watch it resume. Yeah, it was something in that neighborhood, and that just puts a damper. Like, obviously not their fault, but well, I guess
kind
not
of.
Their fault.
But yeah.
Shit just goes wrong sometimes.
No, so, absolutely. And what I would say is, when I say it's, I'm rating it on a relative scale, I don't know, 7.5 type show, maybe an 8, 7 to 8, somewhere in there. That's ignoring the ring breaking, because if someone's getting the iPay-per-view on replay, I'm sure they won't be. Well, first of all, the show started, I was kind of like trying to figure out if I'd done something wrong, because there was no indication that I'd ordered. They said I ordered the show, but there was nothing on the screen until about 20 minutes after it was supposed to start. And then they finally, got going about 25 to 30 minutes late. I don't know what the cause of that was. And then you have another, I'd say, end of the Rhino Bane match to beginning of the next match, bell to bell, at least 40 minutes, and maybe more like 45. And it's a Sunday afternoon, and if their goal was to keep me from giving World Wrestling Entertainment any money, they were successful, because by the end of that show, any thoughts I had of ordering SummerSlam had said, well, I've got to do some other things. This has been a 5-hour time expenditure, and that's enough for one day. So I don't know if that was an evil plan, but it worked in my case.
Yeah, no, they had made mention that, or at least when I initially heard it, they said that they were going to end at 6. So I'm like, oh, okay, I might have a little time to rummage around afterwards, see if the guys are doing anything. But by the time 8 o'clock hit, it was Gonville. 7:45 when Johnny Gargano pinned Jimmy Jacobs there. It's like, okay, I'm out of here. See ya.
No, that's right. I think, you're Eastern time, I'm Central time, obviously. And I think it was almost 10 till 7 when they went off the air. And I thought, well, SummerSlam starts in 10 minutes. Not going to happen. So that was that was where I didn't know if I was going to order it or not. And from what I've read, I don't think I missed that much. But that made my decision for me.
Yeah. Well, that's good. Well, let's instead of hitting around the block here, let's kind of start at the beginning here, because we did really start at the beginning, or in the middle of the show, because and I guess I'll get around to that question later there.
Okay.
But the first match was Jason Gorey challenging Michael the Bomber Facade for the TV title, and it was a casket match. How did the casket look to you on the iPay-per-view?
Well, it didn't look like an Undertaker reinforced special by any means. If you looked at that casket, it looked like it was kind of being held together kind of by force of hand by the end of that match. It was a nice box, and it was shaped like a casket. I'll give them that. But, it probably was not the most sturdy-looking apparatus I've ever seen, and therefore they worked around that pretty well. I've said enough. But what did you think? You were there live.
No, I'm glad that they did not use that in too many spots because it was that bad.
Yeah, they had that spot at the end of the match, you know, where they executed the move in there, and I was worried about it because I was like, they can barely keep the top on this damn thing, and if the bottom gives out, somebody could be in a world of trouble. So they got through it that way. But it was the work in the match was better than the quality of the casket, I'll say, in my opinion.
I was pretty shocked by the quality of the main event, or not the main event. Quality of this match, because Michael Facade is not one of the more smooth wrestlers you will ever see. You might even say he has a tendency to botch a lot of moves.
Yeah, I've always found him to be kind of sloppy, and I've been pretty, and I know this is not WWE, and some of these guys are on their way up, and better athletes than I am, clearly, but that's not the perspective that we're evaluating this from. And I've been fairly hard on Facade, particularly in terms of some of his interviews and just some of his matches being very sloppy, in my opinion. And to me, this was by far the best match I've ever seen him have. I don't know of anything that I've seen that was in that realm, because I don't know, whether that was really, Pat Patterson type booked. I mean, the use, it made very good sense. Gorey tries to use the illegal mist, which makes Facade's counter to that admirable instead of heelish. And, of course, he's went through a lot from Gorey. You could say, well, maybe he could cheat anyway. But the way it worked out, I just thought it was well booked. There were some pretty cool moves in there that were well executed, and this in terms of, I don't know about stealing the show, but certainly the match that most exceeded my expectations, there's no question in my mind, it was this one. I was pretty fired up about the rest of the show after this match. I was like, that was awfully good.
I thought, because when I first saw it come on, I'm like, oh, this is a good you know, opening match, because you get a lot of movement, some high flying. There's something important at stake. And, I mean, I think it always helps to have some, you know, some type of, I don't know, it seems to me like the opinion is that curtain jerking matches are kind of shitty, but or you know, they're usually not the best match. But I always think that it's worth sending out a quality match there first to get everybody into it. And this one worked well in that department.
No, absolutely. You want to get the crowd excited. I mean, that's the old TNA story, is they always started out with an X Division match, and sometimes they were a better quality than others, but it still got the crowd out of their seats and excited about things. And that might have been the idea with this match. Hey, maybe it will be a little sloppy, but there'll be some exciting moves, and we're setting up a big finish here that's going to excite some of the crowd. And then it had the added bonus of, again, being tighter and better executed than I would have expected going in. So like I said, I mean, you know, I never ordered an iPay-per-view before, but as we've talked about, I certainly like this organization, and I'll just say this. Go ahead.
And did you have any problems ordering watching it?
No, it was a good quality picture, filled up my entire computer screen. I had to figure out at first, you know, you have to, like, just like YouTube, you got to double click to go full screen, and then you've got to close what you're on. But that didn't take me. The thing that was concerning was I ordered it at about 2:05 Central Time, and there was no message saying, hey, we're running late. You know, there was, you just had to assume that they were running late. And, of course, I'm sitting there thinking, well, it says I've ordered this, but I'm getting a blank screen. I'm not getting highlight packages or anything, or a pre-show, which would make me feel fine. I just am looking at a blank screen, so I turned my computer off, turned it back on, blah, blah, blah. And then I thought, well, maybe I should just text Kevin. And you're like, yeah, they haven't started yet. So then I didn't worry about it. But that's something that's, you know, I don't know how many people it affects. I would guess a group like this would probably sell the majority of their iPay-per-views on the replay, or sell some DVDs or whatever. But still, that's a strike against them. I mean, it would have been nice to have a scroll or something saying, hey, show's going to start in 20 minutes. And then I wouldn't have been – I can't say I was freaking out, but I was wondering what was going on. I was like, am I wasting my $15 or what?
Well, no, I was just wondering too, because I remember Ring of Honor having all kinds of problems.
Yes.
With it, so I hadn't even thought about that till right now.
They put the CM Punk Bryan Danielson match on for free, and they got overloaded. And that happened a few months ago. I don't know if it happened with their live events or not. But just, you know, the one thing, and I wish I could have gone this year. For those people that don't know, you know, my job is here at the university, and classes started Monday. And so to fly to Cleveland and back and try to make it for the first day of classes was not a realistic option. But, you know, I certainly enjoyed being there last year. I missed the melt dining, which I saw you took advantage of again this year, and wished I could have been there. I would have been a little less hungover this year for it and all that, but that wasn't really an option. But I will say the advantage of this thing is you give Aaron McGuire, and anybody that's listened to this and hasn't heard our pre-Resolution podcast, it's the best show I feel like I've ever been a part of on Stunt Granny. I really enjoyed that last week. And so even though the matches have taken place, that might be worth listening to. And you get a chance to listen to that guy with an open mic for 3 hours or longer. That's a pretty good deal. I mean, the guy is just hilarious. And his stuff is, you know, it's a dry sense of humor. It's subtle. You know, it's not – a lot of times during the TV show I'll write the stuff down just so I remember it, but you know, I was just like, you know, just laughing my ass off several times. So that alone made it worth the price of admission.
Excellent. Yeah, and that'll be something that we will need to, you know, keep track of here as we move along. Anything else really about the TV title match, or should we go ahead and move on here?
No, I think we can move on. I mean, I'm not going to do a lot of play-by-play on this. People would certainly be wise to read your accompanying report about that kind of stuff. I mentioned to you before we went on air, you know, I watched it live, but I didn't take any notes, and so I didn't really have a big mention of too many of the transition moves or moves in the match, with the exception of the Matt Cross Petey Williams match, because they did some unique things in there. But
right,
yeah, so I can't give a lot of play-by-play. I thought it was good. It, like I said, it exceeded my expectations.
Cool. Now, there were a couple of matches here right after that that, you know, they were neither of them were built up very much.
No.
And the first one was Lewis Linden versus Benjamin Boone. And the only question I have about this is one that Jeremy and I discussed, since he does watch Prime Wrestling also now that his cable provider got their shit together. Do you know why Benjamin Boone has turned into a bitch?
I've been bitching about it all year, man. We've talked about this before. I mean, I think he is as talented and as ready for another level, so to speak, or, you know, not to denigrate the people there, but, I mean, a lot of these guys would certainly not turn down a WWE offer anyway, and he's as close as ready to that as anybody in the company, in my opinion. Especially
yeah,
if you could get Nate Matson to go with him, because they're a good tandem. They have a good chemistry. I know they don't use managers that much, but, you know, that's he's in shape. He's a good wrestler. He everything he does looks legitimate to me. I just don't see a big downside with the guy. And, yeah, he loses all the damn time. So I don't know why. I mean, there's nothing wrong with Lewis Linden either, but I felt like this would have been a good opportunity to get Boone back on the winning track. I'm a fan, so I don't know.
Yeah, that was certainly my case. Like, I think I mentioned in on Twitter there, and I don't know if I mentioned it in my report, but I was a little surprised. I know that we saw Lewis Linden wrestle last year, but I've got to admit, I didn't think he was as big, especially tall, as he was.
Right.
Because he wasn't significantly shorter than Ben Boone.
No, and you know, I used to think it was more that Flip Kendrick was kind of short, because Linden certainly, you know, had Kendrick outsized in that regard, but maybe it's yeah, maybe Linden's a little bigger than I thought. I mean, I'm not sure. There's nothing wrong with him. I mean, his interviews have gotten a little better. He's very athletic. As I think you mentioned, he could be a candidate for a cruiserweight type show if WWE does go through with that, or an X Division type thing. I mean, he can move. So
cool. Well, the next matchup, I guess I should mention that Lewis, well, yeah, it makes sense when we were talking about Boone being a bitch that he lost the match. but I guess
other than he lost, that's right.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I could really make sure that people understood what I was talking about there.
Very good.
Well, the next matchup was Cursed versus Matt Justice. Yeah, this was one where I don't know, it had really not a whole lot of anything behind it, like even less than Linden versus Boone. I think they had at least cut some promos beforehand, but this one was just on the card. Did it translate to computer any better?
No, it didn't. And it was one of those things where I can't say I was glued to my TV screen or my computer screen. I mean, I was doing a few other things, like I said, day before my first big day of work. But it was just kind of there. He's supposed to be a baby face. I didn't sense an overwhelming charisma from him. I'm sorry. As I'll talk about in a minute, I have an idea for what these guys could have been doing. In my opinion, it wasn't being in this particular match. In retrospect, since the card, even without the intermission, was pretty damn long, I mean, they probably could have cut this match. That's just my thought.
Yeah, no, I mean, it was there. It wasn't terrible. But we'll see what happens here in the coming years.
And Curse won. I guess we should mention that. Yeah.
Oh yeah. And that was just fine too. Really, there was no reason for him to lose.
That's all I got on that one.
Yeah,
I can go ahead, and if you want me to tell you what I was going to say, it kind of leads into the next match. To me,
okay.
What they should have done is had, you know, there was some ambiguity. Is Matt Justice Dead Wrestling Society or not? And I know he's been gone. He's just coming back. But even if he wanted to be like a double secret agent and turn on Cursed, if they wanted to make him out to be a good guy, I understand you're not going to put Crimson in a tag match, even though he's part of the tag champions. But why not have Gregory Iron and Zach Gowen against Cursed and somebody, and I would just assume, say, Matthew Justice, rather than what we got, which seemed to be, as you wrote very well in your report, a feud that the way it played out made very little sense. It's one of the I've always really liked the booking in PWO and now in Prime Wrestling, and to me, this is TNA. I mean, it's just rushing through a storyline that just, I don't get it. Okay, I'm sorry. I don't, I'm putting the story in front of what we're going to talk about here, but I don't think that this whole thing played out in a very logical manner, and maybe you can fill in the dots for us here. I don't know.
I guess it would have worked together in this matchup because it just seemed like Iron was they just didn't organize it very well altogether, really, because Iron looked like he was on a course to have a match with the Dead Wrestling Society since they had taken out Hobo Joe.
Exactly. I mean, did we just forget about Hobo Joe? I mean, is he dead? What happened to that guy?
They don't usually
let those things drop like that in Prime Wrestling.
Well, they did say that he was out of wrestling indefinitely or something of the sort. So I can't really bug them too much, at least on that front. Things just kind of got whacked out a little bit. I mean, I think they had problems after the break in recording, just as an entire whole. Like, it just seemed like everything was like, oh, crap, we just lost 2 months worth of TV. I mean, even if they only would have done 3 episodes for each of those months and, like, skipped one, they would have had more time to even things out.
No, that's certainly true.
So, I don't know. As an overall whole, I don't know what they were thinking with some of the stuff. You know, it seems like they still, even with the shorter time frame, could have worked things a little bit better.
Yeah, and look, we know that Gregory Iron was legitimately injured in that match where he was supposed to team with Zach Gallen. And maybe something would have happened there that would have made this make a little bit more sense in fairness to the people at Prime Wrestling. That having been said, they had a tag match that never really went off, and then they had Greg Iron in Zach Gallen's corner, and, you know, he got involved and made Zach Gallen mad. So there were these two incidents, and all of a sudden the returning great guy, Zach Gallen, is, you know, a evil heel that hates Greg Iron. Then they have, you know, we may as well give the story away here. They have one match at Resolution. You know, Iron wins. They tell a pretty good story in terms of Gallen maybe could have taken him out, and he kicked out of his Iron kicked out of the finisher or whatever. So he respected him for it and whatnot. And then, you know, after he lost to Iron, Nate Mattson wanted him to just, you know, destroy him and beat him up, and he became a good guy again. The problem is he did some really good heel promos leading up to Resolution, and that it doesn't add up to me that he would all of a sudden in one match. Like I said, it's a TNA story. It went too fast. It's like he had no all of a sudden he respects him so much that he's helping the guy out after he said all these terrible things about him and really didn't have a good reason to turn on him in the first place.
Yep, I think we've summed up that match pretty well too.
Well, and let me say this because this is why I didn't want to open with what I would have liked is which them. He would have never turned, and they would have teamed up. I don't know what you thought of it being there live, but, you know, I never really paid that much attention to Zach Gallen in the past, and his overall athleticism really impressed me. In terms of a match, this was a better match than I expected. So I'm being critical, but the in-ring stuff I thought was pretty damn good. And, I'd heard something about maybe – Zach Gallen was the wrong one-legged wrestler or something when he got hired. I don't know what that's all about. But, you know, I could see why. You know, I don't recall much about that era of SmackDown, but he showed some real legitimate athleticism that I wasn't expecting. So maybe I'm in the dark on it, but he impressed me. I'll say that.
Yeah, and I mean, I remember watching him a decent chunk on WWE TV, but I still was a little surprised at how smoothly he worked in a ring. And, I mean, that's something that always is pretty eye-opening one way or the other. Is there's just something that watching on a TV will never quite get you, no matter what sport and or pseudo-sport you may be into.
Yeah. You know, the thing is, that's a real compliment to him, in my opinion, is you get to watching the match, and you're obviously aware that the man has one leg, but it really slips your mind pretty quickly. I mean, you're watching a compelling, level of athleticism that again, I found, you know, quite impressive. And Iron held up his end of the match pretty well, too. I mean, I really, that's the thing. And maybe that was the idea, is that they wanted to show that these two guys could put together a good match on their biggest show. If that were the case, you know, you don't want to overdo this, but I'd rather had it just be, hey, you know, let's hook them up. Let's see who the better man is and not have this whole evil heel turn stuff that they had.
Yeah, that would have been nice.
But that's all I wanted to say about the match. I didn't want to underscore the fact that those guys both, as particularly Gallen, I thought, really performed at a good level.
Yeah, no, I mean, like I said, it's just surprising sometimes when you see something live like that. It's like, oh, okay. gives you a whole new mindset in my book.
Absolutely.
But let's see here. Yeah, well, the next one was the next match up here was the megastar Marion Fontaine with Aaron McGuire in his corner against Omega Aaron Draven with Justin LaBar in his. Vic Travaglianti took over on the headset. I've got to admit, one of the funniest things that I found in the match itself, because on this one, I didn't pay that much attention to the match itself. I think I didn't pay attention to that much at points, because I kept on, I was almost in tears when McGuire would walk over from, like, he was on the hard camera side so that he could be seen. But then every now and again, he would run over to the announce booth and take off Vic's headset and just start babbling. Like, I was just about in tears. Just the whole idea of it, did it translate well on the show?
No, that part did. And he'd just be like, you know, they're not being fair to Mayor, or whatever he'd always like to say. I mean, he was piping in with that. And you mentioned Fontaine had those new tights, which were quite impressive also. like I said, when I first started watching at the time PWO, I didn't quite get the – and it's just a bias against the fact that the guy's not that big. But I see why they give Marion Fontaine as much attention as they do. I mean, he's an entertaining act, and then you combine him with McGuire, and you've just got you've got some very entertaining and funny stuff in a lot of cases. And yeah, I mean, I was like, I should write some of this stuff down because McGuire was piping in there and worrying about the referee and LaBar and making all kinds of different comments, all of which were quite appropriate and quite humorous.
Excellent. Well, the other big thing this match, really, because this was another one that a lot of it was storyline-driven, the match, because there's more surrounding it, because Draven really hadn't been on TV all that much. So that really didn't help this out. So it's more about it ended up being Vic Travaglianti had been Justin LaBar's
number two.
Well, I shouldn't even, yeah, stooge, sidekick.
Yeah.
I don't know helper, if they just assistant. Called him assistant or what exactly they called him. But he ends up, Justin LaBar ends up becoming the referee after the ref takes a bump. And then just as he's ready to count three after Draven's finisher, Vic yanks him out of the ring, yanks LaBar out of the ring, kicks him in the balls, and then as much as I despise LaBar for being in a spot that I should be in, he took a pretty good bump into the guardrail.
I don't know how much of a choice he had. It looked like old Vic gave him a little momentum going into that guardrail to start with, too. No, that was legit, man. I mean, I'll say that, and you posted it on Twitter. I mean, say what you want to about LaBar, but he hit that guardrail with some pretty big force. Now, what I would say is, I don't know exactly what they're trying to get with LaBar, but I get an impression that maybe it's like he's the baby face that you're really not supposed to like. And if that's the case, then he's more suited for that than you are, Kevin.
good point.
let me say one other thing about this match while it's on my mind. I mentioned to you off air, I think Vic has come a long way as an interviewer. I mean, he certainly doesn't dominate the scene when he's interviewing Brian Castle or Bender or Dan Arkham or several. He interviewed several other people throughout the year, and he's done a pretty good job at it. But first of all, it seemed we all were in agreement this was coming. We didn't want to mention it on the pre-show, kind of let it play out for itself. But yeah. And the reason it was obvious to me it was coming was LeBar had pretty much been a prick to the guy. Like, the way he ordered him around, it was like, dude, this guy's, like, busting his ass for it. You don't seem to appreciate it very much. And
right.
So, I mean, that was kind of interesting that it was more, you know, Vic's justified in what he did from a storyline perspective if they want to play that up. But on the internet pay-per-view, you know, I'm sure Vic's going to get at least one interview about what he did and why he did it, and that's fine, and hopefully he'll do well. But he needs to learn a little about subtlety. He literally spent the entire time he was on the headset. You know, the whole idea is he's supposed to be fair, right? He's not really that biased, even though he may not like Marion Fontaine. But the way he's cheerleading for Draven and talking about how LeBar is like the greatest thing in the history of professional wrestling, you'd have to be really challenged or at an infant level of intelligence not to see this turn coming. And had he played it a little more down the middle with just some subtle things favoring Draven, I think it would have had a lot more impact. I mean, it was just like, dude, just shut up and turn because it's obvious that's what you're going to do. I mean, it was not good from that perspective. And I don't know whether he was coached to do that, but subtlety can go a long way, and that was missing from this turn. I will say that.
Yeah, no, that was why when Jeremy tweeted us about somebody called that months ago, I was like, yeah, that's like calling the sky blue.
Just like, well, we all did. I mean,
it's just like, that's
like,
not even fair.
You were like off air, you're like, yeah, Vic's turning at rest. I was like, oh, yeah. I was like, yeah, he's turning. I mean, I pretty much, yeah, I may not have posted it or verbalized it that much, but and I'm not one to, you know, brag about things like that, particularly when they're that obvious. But, yeah, you need to have some visual impediments worse than mine to not see that coming. So.
Oh, man. Okie dokie. Well, just to keep things chugging along here. Well, we've talked about the big moment with Rhino versus Jason Bayne, which was when the ring broke. And well, what did you think about the match itself? I guess since we can really skip over the ring breaking, since we've covered that, I think, enough at this point.
Yeah.
What did you think about the match quality itself?
Damn good. Damn good match. Jason Bayne is a hard-hitting type wrestler. I mean, you're not going to get a lot of spinning toe holds and things of that nature from him, but you're going to get a pretty physical match. Excuse me. I'll say this, and if anyone that's listening to this can go to the Prime Wrestling website and they have a little clip of when the ring broke, and clearly it wasn't planned. I mean, he hit the ropes, and they just gave way. And, I mean, it's like, you know, Rhino was a real pro about it. It's like his intensity went up 100 degrees, and he just started beating the crap out of Jason Bayne after that. And they were exchanging gores and Bayne lines and you know, what looked to be very physical blows. And it hurt the rest of the card that ring broke, but I don't think it hurt that match at all. I mean, those guys went at it like real pros and just pounded the crap out of each other after that. And I was pretty captivated by it. I don't know about you, but and I was really impressed. And I want to get your thoughts on the finish, and then I'll give mine. But, yeah, what did you think about the match? Are you with me on that?
I mean, it worked. It was just that. I was just – and I guess I concentrated more on – whether the ring breaking shortened that match or not. But I mean, I guess it doesn't matter. Like you said, both of those guys, they don't do anything fancy.
They don't need
both,
the ropes that much.
Both of them took the, can take the punishment and look good doing it. And maybe it was a good thing that it was a short, I don't know how long it was exactly, but it didn't feel like it was much over 10 minutes long. So,
I would say less than 10. I would say 8 minutes maybe. I'm just guessing.
Okay, yeah, because it just seemed, in the end, it did seem like it was an appropriate length, because both of them just kind of, it's almost like talking about the UFC when Dana White says, hey, I'd rather you go down swinging than pussyfoot around for 3 rounds. That was like two guys just swinging for the fences the whole time.
Oh man!
And they weren't, they didn't care if they got knocked out in the meat.
Well, and you think back to, I know the WWE's done this 100 times, but I think back to Taz and Bam Bam Bigelow at the ECW pay-per-view and going through the ring and going through the guardrail and all that. They did that 2 different times, and both times it played into the match, but it was later in the match. I mean, this thing happened really early in the match, and you're kind of like, that doesn't make sense why, in a storyline perspective, that would happen so quickly. But the way Rhino reacted to it, he starts beating the hell out of him with the turnbuckle and with the ring, and you're like, well, I guess maybe it was planned, because if it wasn't, Rhino sure adjusted on the fly awful well. And, I mean, Bane was right with him, but I think Rhino just – like I said, if anybody's thinking about buying this pay-per-view, they picked a good clip to show, a little 50-second clip, because you see that ring break, and then you see Rhino just go crazy. And that intensity stayed for the rest of the match. I really enjoyed this match, and I have my thoughts on the finish, but I kind of want to get yours first, because I don't want to poison the well.
Yeah, no, I just thought it was a little strange that the guy not in the league got the win, which that was the strangest thing to me, honestly. Even though I kind of laughed when I was watching Ring of Honor last night that they were offering up Rhino to take on Kevin Steen in the for the ROH World Title. I'm like, you know what? I'm sorry. Ring of Honor is a bigger promotion, but they are far behind the writing skills of anybody in Prime Wrestling.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. And I'm not watching that product right now, so I'm a little out of the loop. But here's my impression. Unlike Raven, who ended up sticking around, actually, when he came in for Resolution, or Kevin Nash, who did the one sit-down interview where it was good, it would have been nice. I mean, he was eating through it, which was a little distracting for the TV viewer. But, Rhino did a series of these sit-down interviews in studio, I assume, that will really help build to the match. And I don't think they would have done this finish if they don't have some more dates on Rhino. I have no inside information on that whatsoever, but he did such
right.
a good job building the match, and then he did such a good job in the match. And, Aaron McGuire in our pre-resolution interview said that he's pretty tight with Nate Mattson and those guys, and I think that's legitimate the way he said it. I would hope they get some more matches with Rhino, and I would think they would build to a rematch, because they've never, they've always kind of kept Bane's character strong, and I don't think this is a burial of Jason Bane. So I think we may be in for other things, and if we are, I'm all for it. That was a really good match.
We went from a good match with a crazy ending to a match that I was thinking that they were starting to move things along here. Not that I thought that Brian Castle versus Brian Bender was going to be a 20-minute classic to start with, but I was thinking that they were going to get more than about the 2 minutes that they got in the ring there after the repairs were done.
Yeah, I think that that got cut a little bit due to the 45-minute delay or whatever it was. You know, but at the same time, if that was the story, that's fine. I mean, Castle kind of shocked his former mentor, had a real impressive finishing move, and he and Bat Dan celebrated, and I had, you know, it was too short to give much of a judgment to, but what was there was fine. So, yeah.
Yep, that's that was about the way that that match worked. Now, the next match, and I mean, this was the one thing that was kind of interesting. I thought they could have maybe broken up these matches a little bit, because I thought that they had a real triple threat here. Oh, I guess they did kind of break it up a little bit. I'm sorry, because there was four matches left. But the next matchup was Bobby Beverly against Bobby Shields for a hair versus hair match. And what was the best part of this match?
Gosh, it sounds kind of petty to say this, but I enjoyed the character Nikki Valentino was carrying on as the referee. I mean, that guy's pretty funny, and I thought that he did a nice job conflicted with his buddies that were in there fighting one another, and you know, they showed a pretty good intensity during the match. But I mean, Valentino's, from his referee outfit to his mannerisms, to me, got my attention as much as anything. And then, of course, he kind of stayed out of the finish.
Yeah, which I thought was nice. Usually, when you have a guest referee like that, they end up being a determining factor. And yeah, you're right. He went with the old school, like, 80s. WWF referee
Danny
outfit.
Danny Davis style referee outfit, I thought.
Yeah, I was thinking of Gorilla's son,
Joey
Danny
Morella. Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know why I automatically think of him when I think of that that outfit, but I do. Yeah, no, it ended up working out. I guess it lived up to my expectations. That was one where I just wonder how much time they did have to take out because of the ring break. Like, and I guess that happened really to all of these matches. It seemed like they could have been, you know, each of them probably lost a couple of minutes to make sure that they got things done in fairly short order.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. I wouldn't say this match exceeded my expectations, but it was good. I think both these guys are pretty talented, so I had fairly high expectations, and what was there was fine. They had quite an interesting barber or hairstylist there to cut Bobby Beverly's hair. That was only in independent wrestling, I think, do you get that set up. But she was certainly living it up there, her moment in the sun, I guess.
Yeah, I was kind of hoping that they could have, even though I am not surprised that they were pimping a hair salon to help get the advertisements.
Yeah.
It would have been nice if the hairstylist would have been somewhere under the age of 50.
Yeah.
But outside of that, were you...
Unintentionally funny, I think.
Unintentionally funny.
Yeah. And I know you were upset that they didn't finish the shaving on camera, but, you know, again, that had to be a time issue. And Dombrowski, who's a very credible announcer, I mean, certainly within the confines of the organization, was adamant about they're going to shave his head completely backstage. So they made some concessions for time, which I was like, you know, this woman is a hoot and all that, but let's get her off my computer and let's move it along. So I disagreed with you on that. I was ready to see the next match at this point.
Yeah, well, no, it was one of those things where we thought that it would have been probably quicker to just actually use a set of shears to cut his hair than it would have been.
Yes, but then she couldn't have done all those histrionics and her movements and stuff.
Well, that is true. Well, there was a lot of movement in the next match here, which was Petey Williams against Matt Cross. And, you know, I was talking about possible additions to the WWE's cruiserweight division. And considering that I brought up Matt Cross's name, I'm not sure why I didn't think about Petey Williams after watching this match.
Yeah. Yeah. Tight, smooth, two professionals that know what they're doing in there. They had a couple of these kind of like, you know, it's hard to describe, but they're both going for the same thing at the same time, and so they can't quite catch each other. And was borderline silly a couple times, but sometimes it was really good. And,
right.
You know, I'd rather them take that risk for some of the returns they got on it. I mean, I really enjoyed this match. As Aaron McGuire said in our pre-show, it was going to be damn good, and I thought it was.
Yeah, no, that I kind of agree with you, because it was at the very beginning of the match there that they did a lot of that stuff, because they, like, missed kicks and tried to throw clotheslines, but each guy ducked it. And, like, it was just a whole more than a handful of moves that they kept on countering, and then they kind of ended with both them catching a kick from the other guy and slowly letting it down, and Petey Williams going, "No, slower."
That I thought
said
was hilarious.
Slow.
Yeah. Now that I really liked, that part where they both lowered the feet. I thought, I don't know, but for whatever reason I enjoyed that. A couple of the other ones seemed a little contrived, but that's okay. I mean, it's they got it going, and they geared it up a notch, and they both put together some really impressive moves. This is one where if I'd have taken better notes, we could ramble on about it, but again, if people are listening just to, hey, is this is a really good match, and another reason that this was well worth the investment of time and a little bit of money.
It was a good match. Cross ended up winning with his shooting star press, and as I noted in the review there. I think the flip pile driver is one of the most ridiculous moves that has ever been executed in a wrestling ring, because it is so completely unrealistic. But it is a lot of fun to watch.
It's insane. Yeah, it's insane. Yeah.
Okie dokie. Well, one guy who portrays himself as is insane is Crimson, and he was up in the next match against Matt Mason. There was a decent story running up to this match, which was Matt Mason had his wife stolen by Crimson, and that was the other thing. I could have mentioned it earlier that I didn't see some of this stuff due to my spotty recording schedule with a new DVR, but it seemed like she was in with Crimson and under some type of brainwash, and as we found out in the match, she was not. Do you think that was a good way to run with things for this matchup?
Well, I want to wait and see how this plays out, because the implication in of course, the typical prime wrestling PG manner was very heavily stated from Aaron McGuire, and Dombrowski didn't argue about it that much, that there had been, you know, within the realm of the storyline, relations between Mrs. Mason and Crimson. And if that's the case, just so she could try and fail to turn on him so he could win a match, it doesn't make a lot of sense. But I guess in reality we're supposed to think that that didn't happen. So it's a little bit confusing, I guess. I mean, they come to the ring and Crimson kisses her quite forcefully there to get her husband upset. And
Is that why he attacked Mason, attacked Crimson right away?
Oh, yeah, they're making out over there.
Okay.
I don't know if you could see that from your vantage point, but yeah.
No, we saw Mason get in the ring, and my girlfriend was worried about getting pictures. So, and then all of a sudden, all we see is Mason go sprinting down the aisleway.
That's what happened.
And go attack him.
Yeah.
Oh.
And, you know, this is another one where I wish I had the iPay-per-view in front of me, because this is a... some funny Aaron McGuire stuff here. That's all I can remember is, you know, about how Crimson has made Jamie Mason's life a better place and whatever. he had some good lines on our pre-show, so you can imagine what he said on the broadcast. But yeah, no, that's what happened, and so they make out before the match, and they make out toward the end of the match. But then she turns on him the second time, but it doesn't quite work because he has a Dead Wrestling Society in his back pocket. And it, clearly to me, the right finish is Crimson winning this match. I mean, he's one of the most dominant characters in prime wrestling. And, it made sense to me that he would win. But it was a good match. Mason's a good athlete, and they mixed in. As you mentioned, they started out with the type of intensity you would expect in this type of a blood feud. So that, and a lot of wrestling matches in the major organizations, they don't always do that, which is kind of a lost art, I guess. But this was good from bell to bell, no question.
Yeah, no, it was as much as I, because I think in the report I complained more than I said anything complimentary of this match. But yeah, no, It was a good match. It was a good brawl, even if I thought Mason played to the crowd a little bit too much. It was still a good brawl as a whole. So I can't really – and, yeah, there wasn't a big-time, heel that really won except for Crimson. You know, I mean, I know that you like to have the more baby faces win at an event like this, but it was good that that him and Cursed really won to help keep the Dead Wrestling Society a viable faction.
Yeah, overall, I thought there's not really the finishes themselves. If I went through it from end to end, I don't know if I disagree with how they did any of them. Gory losing to Facade made sense. I thought Boone should have won, but that's not a big deal. I didn't care about Cursed Justice that much, but you're probably right. Cursed should have won. Iron winning. You know, Fontaine and Rhino were heels that won, but given where the story was, that again, we'll wait and see on Rhino, but I think it's going to work out for the best. So, yeah, I agree.
Gotcha.
But, yeah, Crimson, I thought, needed to win this match. I mean, you know, as you said, he's been around longer, and, Mason's going to have to prove himself, I guess, but, yeah.
Yeah, it'd be, if he sticks around, he can get a return win sometime.
Yes.
Well, another guy that, another heel that did not win would be Jimmy Jacobs, who was in the main event with Johnny Gargano. Did the cameras do a good job of following the wrestlers through the crowd?
Yeah, pretty good. Pretty good. I probably was suffering from some burnout at this point. And I like Gargano. He's grown on me quite a bit. For a main event, I wasn't just super excited about this match. I think I kind of – the only thing that surprised me about it, honestly, was that Bobby Beverly didn't get involved. They'd certainly hinted at that he would. I don't know why he didn't, because that might lead to an interesting dynamic, Beverly against Jacobs. But, yeah, it played out pretty inevitably to me. So I wasn't glued to my computer on this. I just have to be honest.
Yeah, no, I've got to admit, I was doing a little bit of clock watching at this juncture, because it was starting to get late with and we forgot to mention really at the top of the show that there was a 20-minute delay really just in the start. We mentioned a delay, but we didn't really say how long it was. So
no,
really,
I think I mentioned it, Kevin, because I said the thing. I was wondering why it didn't start till 25 after.
Oh, okay. But yeah, I mean, you combine both of those, both of the delays, and it's kind of tough when something runs an extra hour long, at least. It does kind of put a drag on things. Now, it wasn't that bad. Like, I was more just ready to go home, but got to admit, I finally put down the phone from trying to do too much tweeting and watch the match. And I did really like. I like the quality of match. I have a little more respect for Jacobs, although I still have the initial problem that he's just too small. I mean, I think I looked at the website today and they said he was 181. I'm just like, okay, he's almost the same weight as me, but he doesn't look like he goes to the gym as much as I do, which really should not be the case for any professional wrestler as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, he performed well enough in the match. You know, I don't know what to say. I mean, you know, I just don't. I mean, they treat him like a really big deal, like he's this huge star, and I understand why they do that. And he interviewed well. He carried himself well.
Yeah, this whole thing
seemed inevitable. I just didn't have a tremendous amount of interest in it. That was just me. I mean, it just seemed obvious what was going to happen, and sometimes that's the right thing. I'm not even complaining about it. I will say that the guest ring announcer, Mr. Bachelor of the Year or whatever the hell he was, seemed like a complete ass, but he just seemed very self-absorbed, I'll say that. But he did a really good ring announcing job. And then the DJ guy, who actually seemed a little more self-aware, didn't take himself too seriously, took a shot over there in the ringside table like a champ. So I'll give a little respect to both those guys. It's, you know, for what it's worth.
Yeah, no,
sure
I was amused since you finally knew where we were sitting. That you were like when Chris Van Vliet, the 2011 most eligible bachelor in Cleveland, came out there for ring announcing duties. You're like, you guys did not look impressed. And I just, as soon as I hear that now, I'm just going to think of the gymnast there, Michaela, and her not being impressed with just the sideways smirk on her face.
Yeah.
Because, it was just like, well, A, I thought that he was going to do more announcing, I guess, throughout the night. Like, I didn't realize they were only going to bring him out for the main event. And I know that they had to do it, but it was just like another one of those things that, you know, it just extended the main event. It's just like, oh my gosh! Like again, I just want to get moving. I've got a 2.5-hour drive back to my place. I don't need this clown coming out to announce. Just let Pedro do his job, which he does very well.
Pedro's
and,
good.
We can keep on moving.
In fairness to him, I mean, they got on there, they got off fairly quickly. Sure, it helped them sell a few tickets and get them a little publicity. And like I said, you know, when I saw this guy, I was like, I don't think I like this guy at all. And he's probably going to half-ass his way through his job, and it's going to really piss me off because they have a good ring announcer. But, you know, his ring announcing was good. I don't know if it added anything to the match or not, but it certainly didn't take away from it. So he took his job seriously. I respect that. So there you go. I mean, whatever. But yeah, the match itself was pretty good. Yeah, I you know, I've never watched a really long Jimmy Jacobs match, and he held up his end pretty well, and you know, the right, you know, Gargano is the big hero there. I don't know. It seemed like they were going, the whole thing, it never quite, it just seemed like, you know, from last year with Bane holding the title and then Matt Cross's reign kind of being cut short, probably because of the TV issues, both those title reigns seemed a little incomplete, and they're back to Gargano, which is fine, but I guess I expect them to be going a different direction right now, if you'd have asked me a year ago. But nothing wrong with
gotcha.
It. It was good.
Yeah, no, I agree. Like it was a good enough match, but yeah, I think when you have no suspense in the main event, it doesn't help. It seemed pretty obvious that Jacobs was just there to lose, essentially.
I would agree. Thumbs up, Joe, though. No doubt.
Okay, Doug. Well, you said you'd give it a 7 or so.
I'm going to go 7. I'm going to go between 7.5 and 8. The more I think about it, because a lot of those matches really did deliver. So.
Yeah, no, I can't really disagree with that assessment, because like I said, a lot of them were storyline driven. So maybe the match quality wasn't there, but at least the story was there for the most part. Aside from that whole Zach Gowen double take there, that was the only one that story-wise didn't make a whole lot of sense. So, yeah. I think
all right, that's my low battery. My low battery button just was beeping in my ear, so
excellent.
I better sign off quickly.
Okie dokie. That's your sign-off?
Hey, thanks for listening. Watch Missouri Tigers. Show people in the SEC that we can compete at the highest level of football. And if you get a chance, throw the $15 to Prime Wrestling. I think you'll find it worthwhile. That's my sign off.
Okie doke, grandkids. I've already been drinking a Sippy Time beer, but it's time to go grab another one, and we will see you another time. Out. Yeah.